Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. This week's guest is California Democratic Congressman Jim Costa, who joins us to talk about his challenge to become ranking member on the House Ag Committee and the future of the Farm Bill. But first, here are this week's headlines. Peter Navarro will return as a senior trade advisor in the next Trump administration. Navarro will serve as a senior counselor for trade and manufacturing. He was in charge of the White House National Trade Council in the first administration and was released from federal prison in July following a four-month sentence for refusing to hand over documents to the House committee investigating what happened on January 6, 2021. Trump has praised Navarro for negotiating the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and revising the free trade agreement with South Korea. Producers are feeling more optimistic about their finances next year and that they'll get relief from regulations, according to the latest Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group. The barometer as a whole is up to its highest level since May 2021. 25% of those surveyed in November expect better times next year compared to 16% who felt that way in October. 55% also believe environmental regulations will be less restrictive in 5 years. Despite the positive outlook, 42% believe American agriculture could be involved in a trade war that reduces ag exports. And finally, Congresswoman Angie Craig and Congressman Jim Costa are challenging Congressman David Scott to be the top Democrat on the House Ag Committee. Congressman Costa faced off against Scott for the role of chairman in 2020, but lost. He's been on the Ag Committee since 2005. We asked him how he would provide strong advocacy for farmers across the country if elected ranking member.
I'm a third-generation farmer. My grandparents came to this country as immigrants, working in dairies, and saved up enough money to buy a small dairy and then expanded through there. So it's our efforts in California represent, in my own case, a third generation that understands the challenges every day that farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women have in putting food on America's dinner table. See, I used to chair in the California State Senate, the Ag and Water Committee, a very important committee in California. And so for 20 years, I bring a lot of experience and expertise on working on these critical issues that involve American agriculture. Food is a national security issue. It's actually an international security issue. It doesn't often get looked that way, but it is. And the Farm Bill, the reauthorization of the Farm Bill, is something that I've worked on in the 20 years that I've been a ranking member on the House Ag Committee. It's my fourth Farm Bill. And traditionally, it's been one of our more bipartisan pieces of legislation that we pass every 5 years in the Congress. We have been, stymied on the nutrition programs. For the Farm Bill was not only a safety net for farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women, but for 42 to 47 million Americans who are food insecure.
I would like to go back and touch on the point that President Trump performed so well with rural voters in the last election. What do you think Democrats need to do to win back that rural vote?
We need to listen, most importantly. Those of us who represent rural districts in America that have been successfully reelected, I think in large part, is because we listen a lot. And we're hands-on, and we visit our communities. We meet with our various agricultural organizations, whether it be the dairy organizations or other agricultural organizations, and we work on projects together. And, most of my constituents, including my agricultural community, of which I'm a part of, really are more focused on getting things done as opposed to partisan politics. And they appreciate the fact that, members like myself reach across the aisle to work together. I think Democrats need to, who represent rural areas, need to talk about how they can work together with their local agricultural communities on critical issues facing those agricultural commodities that whether it's in investing in infrastructure, whether it be in broadband, whether it be in transportation, whether it be in water. And we do that full the time. I mean, it's a body of work that I've been engaged in that are critical for our farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women to be able to do what they do so well which has put food on America's dinner table.
Let's move on to the farm bill. What must happen, in your opinion, before a new bill can get passed?
I think we have to work together in a bipartisan fashion before the end of the year to pass this continuing resolution to set the stage for next year's efforts to pass the farm bill. And I think that begins by ensuring that we deal with some of the issues that are still before us, trying to reimburse farmers and rural areas that have been impacted by disasters. So disaster relief in terms of the supplemental bill needs to be addressed. Included in that, and that not only where the hurricanes took place, but where examples of like the high path avian flu. In addition to that, we have some orphan programs that are a part of the farm bill that need to be included in a continuing resolution so that we have consistency among the ag community on these orphan programs. And then it would be good, I think, because again, the modification that we've, I think, got an agreement on crop insurance, I would like to see included as well in the continuation of the CR, because so many farmers, ranchers, dairymen, and women across the country are feeling the impacts in their crop insurance, and the modifications that I think we want to include would help them, would assist them during these difficult economic times where they're suffering from losses at the farm gate.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Jim Costa right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Republicans want to pass a year-end package that would include disaster aid as well as assistance for farmers who've been hurt by the decline in commodity prices. We asked Congressman Jim Costa about the chances of that package passing by the end of the year.
Well, I'm hopeful, and you're correct to point that out, because there are two parts of it. There's the supplemental package that would include funding for FEMA and for other disaster relief that I touched on. And then there, of course, is the extension of the continuing resolution to keep funding at the current level within the United States Department of Agriculture.
I'd like to get your thoughts on President-elect Trump's nominee for Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins. Do you think she's going to be the right representative for farmers and ranchers moving forward?
Well, I certainly hope so. I don't know her. I'm anxious to meet her. Clearly, she grew up in a farm area. I was pleased to see that she was involved in 4-H and FFA as a young person and showed animals. I say that because I was in 4-H and remember those years as formative in terms of the animal projects I had and the other projects I had that hopefully we'll be able to share. So going to Texas A&M obviously has very good credentials. So her background, I think, indicates that she grew up in a rural ag environment. And so that's good news, I think. And her other experience in her career seems to indicate that she understands how government works and how it doesn't work and how we can work together to make our efforts effective on behalf of American agriculture. And I would add also our regional efforts across the country.
Congressman Jim Costa, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We'll be back with our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at the country's growing ag trade deficit in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Declining, U.S. ag exports are expected to widen the trade deficit in 2025 to $40.5 billion, the largest deficit on record. The United States had a positive trade balance until 2019, when China responded to tariff increases introduced by then-President Donald Trump. The U.S. has since faced an ag trade deficit in 4 of the last 6 years. As you can see on this chart, U.S. agricultural imports in 2025 are forecast at $215 billion. This is an increase of $3.5 billion from the August projection, largely due to horticulture, sugar, and tropical product imports. U.S. ag exports are expected to reach $170 billion next year. This projection is about $500 million higher than the August forecast due to increases in livestock and dairy exports, but down from a high of $196 billion in 2022. However, the trade future is uncertain given President-elect Trump's threat to impose new tariffs on imported products, raising the possibility of another trade war. Effective January 20th, Trump said he will impose new duties of 25% on all imports from Canada and Mexico, and a 10% added tariff on goods from China. During the campaign, Trump said he would levy an across-the-board tariff of up to 20% on all U.S. imports. You can read a deep dive into ag trade issues in Des Keller's series on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood, and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools, like glyphosate, to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, and we've gotten a lot of questions about President-elect Trump's nominee to be Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins. Joining us today are two people who know her. Corey Rosenbusch grew up with her in Glen Rose, Texas, and is now the CEO of the Fertilizer Institute. And Drew DeBerry, a co-founder of Axis Strategies, who first knew her when she worked for former Texas Governor Rick Perry. Drew was also Deputy Commissioner for the Texas Department of Agriculture. Corey, I want to start with you first. Tell us what you learned about Brooke's personality and values while growing up in a small Texas town and being involved in 4-H and FFA.
Well, Brooke and I both grew up together in the small town of Glen Rose, Texas. It's about 2,000 people southwest of Fort Worth. I was a few years younger than Brooke, and her twin sisters and I were in the same grade, so we would track Brooke all over the state of Texas. And my dad was her ag teacher, one of his first state officers, state FFA officers. And I remember very fondly Brooke. They won the State Farm Broadcasting, something very near and dear to you, competition. And the topic that year that they were the radio broadcasters on was viticulture. What is it and why should FFA members be concerned? And so whether it was FFA competitions or looking at her FFA projects out at their small farm, Brooke was dedicated, she was focused, she was driven, and someone that I personally always looked up to and wanted to be like one day. And I think all of her hard work, whether it was raising her goats for the county fair or running for state FFA officers, was, you know, are those characteristics that she'll bring to office.
Drew, I'd like to bring you into the discussion, sir. You know, during the first Trump administration, she served as the director of the Domestic Policy Council. How will that experience impact her ability to serve as Ag Secretary?
I've worked with Brooke in several different roles, and I think she's had many roles that have prepared her for being Secretary of Agriculture. She's going to be a great Secretary of Agriculture. Specifically to your question, Her job at the Domestic Policy Council is kind of the definition of what it takes to be Secretary of Agriculture. Most people know that the Secretary is going to interact with a number of stakeholders, members of Congress. One big stakeholder that she's going to be working with is the White House. As being the director of the Domestic Policy Council, she knows all the policies that the Department of Agriculture is going to be involved with. She knows how those are impacted by global policies, by other policies at other agencies. I think that's going to be critical for American agriculture, is having a secretary that understands how these policies that the secretary is directly involved with are impacted by other policies at other agencies, how the White House will view things when she needs to work with the White House to get certain things done for American agriculture. And we've seen it many times in the past where the secretary is challenged with getting White House involvement in agriculture, getting the White House to be proactive, or getting the White House to come along with policies that some of the ag groups or some of the farmer ranchers in various states need the Secretary of Agriculture involved with, and as a result are going to need the White House involved with. Domestic Policy Council, her training there is going to be outstanding for her to do this job.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood, and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools, like glyphosate, to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Welcome back. Farmers and ranchers look to a USDA secretary to understand and advocate on their behalf. We asked Corey Rosenbusch how President-elect Trump's pick for Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins, can communicate about the challenges and opportunities that people in rural America have to deal with.
I think Brooke's going to be a tremendous asset for farmers and ranchers, because she's going to be probably the most powerful USDA secretary we've ever had. Her connections with Trump and her direct line with the White House is going to ensure that rural America's voice is heard loud and clear. And that's what gives me a lot of confidence about her nomination. But she's still very much in touch with rural America. Her sister is the principal there in Glenrose at the middle school, and she still has kids that are very active on and showing steers there in the state of Texas. So those core values and her ability to really listen, I think, are going to be a huge asset for rural America.
And Drew, can you speak to her ability to solve problems and listen to both lawmakers and constituents? How have you seen her build consensus in previous roles?
Many times. Well, let's go back to first when she was Texas Governor Rick Perry's policy director. Governor Perry had an outstanding track record of building coalitions and working with people to get big agenda, big initiatives accomplished. Then she went and she ran the Texas Public Policy Foundation. She took this think tank organization, conservative think tank, and she turned it into something way bigger than it ever had been. And she did it by pushing the envelope, getting her board members involved, getting stakeholders outside her board involved, doing big things in the public policy space and helping drive our public policy debate here in Texas at the legislature with the governor and so on. Then, you know, obviously we've already talked about her role in the White House, but even after that with AFPI, she has a tremendous track record of being able to dive into difficult issues, look at them through the lens of how the American people want her and want our elected officials to look at them. And then, more importantly than anything, she's very good at taking that vision and implementing it down the road. That's her track record, and she's going to be great. And us in American agriculture are going to benefit tremendously from her doing that.
And I do want to kind of get both of your guys' thoughts here on this final question. Corey, I'd like to start with you first, sir. How do you see her working with someone who has called for disrupting conventional agricultural production systems like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., if he has confirmed as Secretary for Health and Human Services?
Well, I think Brooke's diplomatic skills are top rate. I think her ability to hear both sides, but especially make sure that the voice of American agriculture and food systems really shine. I think as we think about and hear some of the statements that are being made, and we still have to wait till the administration gets into office to understand what those specific policy issues are going to be. But there is no one that I would rather have on the side of the American farmer than Brooke. And I think her ability to make sure that that side of the story is represented is going to be fantastic. Brooke and I both went to Texas A&M. And I remember very fondly that Brooke was the first ever female student body president. And as you think about coming into an institution that started as an all-male military university and watching her not only get elected, but really be a force of change at that institution, it just shows you her ability to work with anyone and really achieve whatever she sets her mind to. And in this case, it will be what we need for American agriculture.
And Drew, your thoughts as well, sir.
I love this question. I think the fact that you asked the question speaks to the underlying message that you're hearing from both Corey and me, and that is the role of Secretary of Agriculture is different from any other cabinet member. Farmers and ranchers need an advocate there that can work with their fellow cabinet members, can work with the White House, can work with Congress. Whether it's the Secretary of HHS, we also need to think about how she's going to interact with the U.S. Trade Representative, the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator. And I think the key question that helps us understand that, or the key answer that helps us understand that, is relative status among her cabinet colleagues. And Brooke is going to have that. She has the president's ear. She's a brilliant person. She's great at listening. She's great at building coalitions. And she will not be shy at picking up the phone, going down the street, meeting with her colleagues, and standing up for the needs of agriculture, just like she has throughout all of these roles in her past. It's a great question, and I appreciate that the world is watching this nomination through that lens. We're going to have a Secretary of Agriculture that can work with her colleagues and that will have the relative status with her colleagues to get big things done for agriculture.
Certainly a lot of those characteristics that you guys mentioned, I'm sure President Trump knows all about that, and that's why he selected her as his nominee for Ag Secretary. Corey, Drew, thank you so much for joining us both. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at census data on producers who spent at least 200 days working off the farm in this week's Map It Out.
About 40% of U.S. farmers worked 200 days or more off the farm in 2022, according to data from the latest Ag Census. Off-farm job opportunities and rural economic development are so important to those who want to start farming or raise their families on farms. Oftentimes, a spouse working an off-farm job can generate steady income or earn health insurance and retirement plans for the family, income and benefits that keep the family farm afloat during the up and down cycles on the farm. According to Agricultural Resource Management Survey data, more than half of family farms did not turn a profit in 2022, the year the census was taken. And 84% of farm households earned at least half their total income from off-farm sources. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Congress will be in session for two more weeks before breaking for the rest of the year. The latest World Supply and Demand Estimates Report, Consumer Price Index, and Monthly Crop Production Report are released Tuesday. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Honecke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.